Support for America Reimagined comes from the Raymond James office in Idaho Falls, located at 450 B Street, and the Idaho Falls law firm of Smith, Wolf, Anderson, and Wilkinson.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Alturas Institute's presentation of America Reimagined, our weekly radio show featuring experts from around the country who join us to contemplate and imagine how America might look different under various circumstances, policies, programs, and laws. Today's guest is well known throughout Idaho. She is Gemma Gaudette, the popular prize-winning journalist, a veteran of the world of journalism, and the host of the very popular Boise State Public Radio program, Idaho Matters, which airs every day at noon, Monday through Friday, COVID or not. Gemma Gaudette came to Idaho in 1999 to serve as anchor of the fledgling Fox 12 news station. She's remained in Boise since then, luckily for us. And over the past 15 or 20 years, she has held a number of jobs, including serving as a news anchor and reporter. And the folks at Boise State Public Radio are very happy that she's chosen to remain there. Before she came to Idaho, by the way, she served as news anchor and reporter in Tampa, Florida, and she had the pleasure in those days of covering some very major news stories, including Hurricane Katrina, Nassau's return to flight after the Columbia disaster, and during the 2004 presidential election, she interviewed both George W. Bush and John Kerry. It's such a great pleasure to welcome Gemma to America Reimagined. I'm a great admirer of your show, Gemma. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you for asking me to join you. I appreciate it.
There's so much to talk about in the world in which you've worked for many years, the world of journalism, public radio, and of course, the difficulties and challenges facing journalists in covering news, or in your case, delivering a daily show in these COVID conditions. So let's start with, in fact, how you have been able to carry out your duties in delivering the content and hosting your guests on a live talk show at Boise State Public Radio during Idaho Matters. How have you coped with COVID?
So, you know, it's very interesting. I used to always say one of the things I loved about broadcasting and journalism is that I couldn't anchor the news from my house, right? So when I was off, I was off. You go into the station, you know, you do all your work and then you come home. Well, guess what? COVID changed all that. I have literally been broadcasting the program from my house, our home office, since March 19th of last year. So we're coming up almost a year. And I mean, of course, one of the reasons is when we started the lockdown shortly after March 13th, I believe, we had to make some really quick decisions in our news department about, okay, we've got to continue to cover this. We also have to keep employees safe. And how do we do that? So all of a sudden it was like, okay, everybody, you know, work from home. You've got your laptops and this and that. And for our reporters, it was a bit easier because they could do all of their reporting remotely and from home. Our team, we put on a live daily talk show where we have guests live in the studio with me. We are all less than 6 feet apart. And how do we do that? So it was literally all of a sudden, you know, our chief engineer shows up in a mask at my house with this equipment, right? So that we can set up basically a mini studio at my house. And then our executive producer, she works remotely from home. Our other producer, someone actually has to physically run the board, which is what, you know, makes you go on air. So she was only one of two people that were ever in the building in order to continue the broadcasting of the show. And then Zoom became our best friend. We literally had our guests on Zoom, and we haven't missed a beat. I mean, I think in some ways our show has gotten incredibly better because of the thoughtfulness that has to go into what we do on a daily basis. And I think we've also been able to bring in guests from frankly all over the country, right? Experts, not just in Idaho, but experts from everywhere. And no one is jarred by that anymore because we all gotten so used to everything being remote. So I think it's given us a deeper level of our program. So kind of a blessing in disguise, right? When we had to make this shift so incredibly quickly.
So you took the proverbial lemons and turned them into wonderful lemonade in a way that you might not have imagined back in March of 2020.
If someone had told me at the beginning of last year that, you know, 3 months later, I'd be doing my show from my house, I told them they were insane. And, you know, on top of that, when I started broadcasting from home, my kids also started doing school from home. Yeah. So that brought a whole new level of things happening because both my kids were live online. So let me tell you, the internet's great when it's not, until it's not. And there were times too, where, you know, all of a sudden I'm crackling on the air, like I'm, you know, or our internet's going out because there's so many people trying to use it. Or I had my at then 8-year-old running into the home office in the middle of the show, having a question about something. So it has been a wild ride to say the least.
You know, those are really interesting points. Children running through the living room or dogs barking in the background. Americans have become accustomed. And I think there's a homespun feeling about that, drawing us together across the country. You and I have seen those kinds of episodes. They might once have appeared on TV's funniest home videos, but now they are something of an ongoing practice. Mm-hmm. You have indicated you feel so comfortable with this via Zoom. Do you suppose that you'll go back to the station anytime soon, or are you content to deliver this show from the contents of your friendly environs and the comfort of your home?
You know, what's interesting with that is when we first started the program, it'll be 3 years in April, my general manager kind of had a vision of the show not necessarily having live guests for the entire hour, having maybe some magazine styles and they're having some phone interviews. And I was really adamantly opposed to that because my comfort level is being live with someone in, you know, right there with me, talking to them, you know, that eye contact, right? I think there's a nonverbal communication that you can have that you don't necessarily get if you're on the phone with someone, right? So I was very uncomfortable with all of that. And I think that's one of the reasons why the program became live guests in studio all of the time. I think that was really where my strengths were. And what was interesting is that when we had to make this change, what I found was that I would have a headache at the end of my program probably every day for probably the first 2 months. And I realized what it was that I had to listen at a level that I hadn't had to listen before because I wasn't seeing the person.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you know, ask a question and you're waiting, like, are they going to talk? Did we lose the connection? And it was kind of this dance in a way that I had to get used to. And what I have found now is that it works just as well, if not better, than having someone in the studio. And as I said previously, it's opened up who we can bring into the program. Then from a safety standpoint, because of the format of the show, of it being live and live guests in the studio. And it's myself in the studio, it's my producer in the studio, and then sometimes upwards of three guests in the studio at one time. And then we have less than 2 minutes to switch guests out because we have four segments in the hour show. It's not safe. I mean, we cannot ask people to come into the studio and be in those close confines, frankly, until we have global immunity. And on top of that, you can't really wear a mask when you're doing an interview on the radio because it'll be all muffled, right? So that's not an option. So yeah, long story short, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I will ever go back. I think we have found our rhythm in a really special way in this time.
I think you're right about that. Why after all, should talk show radio be any different than so many other industries that are undergoing tremendous changes? The travel industry, business at large, doing more work over Zoom rather than sending agents across the country to do business. And who knows how these changes are going to continue to evolve. But in the course of your career, you've held a number of positions, news anchor, you've been a reporter, now, of course, obviously holding down the position as talk show host. Of these various positions, Gemma, which can you identify one that you might enjoy more than the other?
I always say that what I am doing now is what I was meant to do with my career. And it's interesting. I mean, I was 4 years old when I knew I wanted to be a journalist. I have a very vivid memory of sitting on a picnic table with my dad, and I was sitting on the actual table and my dad was sitting on the bench. And he just says, he goes, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" And I just go, "Daddy, I want to be on TV." And he said, and he goes, "Well, you can be anything you want to be." And, you know, when that evolved, I was four, right? So I watched Sesame Street a lot. So maybe I wanted to be a Muppet. I don't know. But it evolved over time. And I knew going into college that I was going to study journalism and broadcasting. And I think it was kind of a fairly traditional path of, all right, well, that means I'll go into television and I'll, you know, become a reporter and move up to an anchor and just make those steps. And, you know, so I got my very first job in Roseburg, Oregon. Then I went to Idaho Falls for a couple of years and I was in Lincoln, Nebraska. And then I came to Boise. And then as you mentioned with Tampa, I had a huge opportunity to go to Tampa from 2004 to 2006. I had a big goal, which I think a lot of people do when they get into this industry, but I really wanted to see if I could get to the network level. And so going to Tampa from Boise is a massive jump. And I was a weekday anchor there and I had huge opportunities, you know, career-wise of the things we covered in Florida. But in the 2 years I was there, I never felt like I fit necessarily. That I had the ability to be at that level and I was at that level, but there was a moment where I realized I didn't know if that's really what I wanted for the rest of my life. Something just felt off. So long story short, my now husband, he had moved with me and he's from Boise and we were getting married. Our wedding was back here in Boise and we decided to kind of make a leap of faith and move back here a month before we got married. And I went back into television and worked at one of the news stations in Boise. And then after my second son was born, I just decided, you know what, this is not conducive to having small children. There's no schedule, right? I'm getting up at 1 a.m. to anchor the morning news, and I'm going to bed before my one-year-old is. So I decided to leave and to go into media relations for a couple of years and really didn't miss the industry. And then this opportunity came up with Idaho Matters. It was this new idea. Every once in a while, I filled in for some folks at Boise State Public Radio News. So I knew folks there. And so I was given the opportunity to start the show from scratch and to be the host. And it was something where I was like, okay, this could work. This feels good. And they were there. And I will tell you, the thing was, is being a working mom. My big thing was I want to pick my kids up from school every day. Mm-hmm. And that was the kicker. That was like, I want to pick my kids up from school. And when they said yes to that, it was like, okay, they're willing to work with my personal life in order for this show to work. I give you all of this context because I feel like what I was meant to do in my career is exactly what I am doing today. It fits who I am. I believe that what we are doing is a tremendous service to our community, in particular during COVID. I think we educate, we inform, we at once sometimes entertain a little bit, but we're given a broad space to do that because the show is an hour. Mm-hmm. So we spend 12 minutes on a topic. Some days we spend an hour on something. That's unheard of in broadcasting these days. And I really do feel that this is where I was supposed to be. However, if I hadn't had the 20 plus years of doing what I did, I don't believe I could be as effective doing today.
This sounds like such a success story, a happy story. And to think it all began with parental encouragement from your
honestly. Parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, you are part of a journalism world that so many in America revere because public radio, part of the world occupied by national public radio, is viewed by so many as dispensing reliable, trustworthy information, so critical at any juncture in American history, but particularly over these past few years. And of course, while it's revered by so many, the world of public radio is often attacked by some conservatives who aren't interested in the fact that taxpayer dollars are being used to support public radio. What do you think about those kinds of criticisms, and how might you respond to that, Gemma?
Oh, well, I've been criticized for it by some of our conservative friends here in the great state of Idaho. You know, I think part of it is that, you know, you have to look at of how much of the budget, right, is given to public radio. And it's only between 10 and 15% if you're talking local. And then it is all listener funded, right? And that 10 to 15% is infrastructure. So you're getting a building, basically. I understand that people may not like that, right? However, that is the structure of it. I'm also a firm believer that if that money went away, we would stay here. Because I think with public radio in particular, and this is, I always say, I wish I had found it sooner, is because it is accurate and fact-based. And that is the tenets of what public radio and public television are, because we're not beholden to advertisers, right? They're supposed to be a firewall between a news department and a sales department. And for the most part, even when I was in private TV, commercial television, there was, for the most part, but you would have salespeople come in asking if maybe you could do a story on this or that business, right? That never happens in public radio and public television. And in fact, they're even called underwriters. It's not a sales department, right? There is a difference. There truly is. And you know what? I'm not going to sit here and defend the funding of it, because you're never going to change someone's mind who is set on believing what we report is wrong, how we get our funding is wrong. But what's funny, they still listen.
Touche. You know, some people who were critics years ago came round and now are among the biggest boosters, for example, of National Public Radio. Some of our listeners may remember that in 1995, then Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich was a rabid critic of NPR. And then he did a 180 and acknowledged that there was no more effective means for accurately conveying what he said than public radio. And so he became a supporter. Something, and I mention that because maybe some conservatives who listen to this program might take a cue from a person whom they greatly admire. But you know, you're part of a world, a larger world, and that is the media in general, which we both would acknowledge, Americans everywhere would acknowledge, has taken a beating over the past 4 years under Donald Trump, whom you well know, ridiculed the media as fake news, and going so far as to attack the media by saying enemies of the people, a terrible phrase to use. And it's made it difficult to cover news across the country. And in some ways, I think the siege on the nation's capital 2 days ago reflects the ongoing effort to dismiss American institutions, including the media. How did you respond? How did you feel, first of all, as a member of the media, when you heard what were vicious attacks on your world, your industry, and how have you dealt with that, let's say, over the past 4 or 5 years?
You know, it's interesting because I think that my entire career, I mean, literally, I always joke, oh, just blame the media. The media gets blamed for everything. And we do. And yes, it has gotten exponentially worse under the current administration. I think that when you have a very strong voice that says it's fake news, and then they say it's fake news because they don't like what you are reporting, that is different than it being fake.
Right.
It's different. Look, I've had lawmakers, I've had business people in Idaho, not like some of the reporting that I've done, and we've had conversation about it. But you know why they didn't like it? Because they didn't like that we were pointing out the truth. So if you don't like what's being reported, then don't do it. I mean, truly, no. But with that said, I think there are times from a personal standpoint where I have to take a mental break from it. For example, on Wednesday with the siege at the US Capitol, there was someone, one of these extremists, had put on a door, murder the media. And there are social media groups of the right-wing extremists who have plans to murder the media. Mm-hmm. And look, it's like any other job. I am not here to say that every journalist is fair and objective, but there's also a difference between objectivity and neutrality. And it is our job to point out the facts, whether you like the facts or not, right? At the same time, I'm a mom. I have 2 young children. And so to have to, you know, and one of my kiddos, you know, he's a little anxious sometimes. So I also have to make sure that he's not necessarily seeing all of this because that was what I do. And I couldn't get the kid out the door in the mornings if he thought something was going to happen to mommy. And I think sometimes in people's passion for what they believe, mm-hmm. forget that, you know, it's our job as journalists. I'm doing my job. That is what this is. Mm-hmm. And it is my job to report the facts. And in order to give the public the ability to be educated and to make their own decisions, it is as simple as that. But I think sometimes people need to take a breath and they've got to step back. Mm-hmm. And realize that we're people too. I mean, I am a part of this community as a community member more than I am a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Good points.
I contribute more to this community in Idaho, in Ada County, in Boise, as a parent and as a working citizen and as a volunteer than I do at my job. Mm-hmm. I think we have to remember that sometimes, but it's hard to do in the heat of the moment.
Right. So well said. And I like your point. John Adams said facts matter. Facts are crucial to a democratic system, obviously, as the founders believed. And of course, that's another reason why they provided constitutional protection for freedom of the press, so that the press could report about the activities of government mm-hmm. without the spin that governmental officials would obviously apply to every single action, statement, and posture that they assume. So you're in a critical position, and the world in which you work is critical to the success of democracy. Let me ask you, Gemma, as we near the end of our time going forward, it always goes too quickly, I'm sorry to say, and we see the transition in Washington. And we see perhaps some of the old ways and the criticisms, the vicious attacks on the media, perhaps being swept to the sidelines and a much different view being ushered into Washington. Do you take a view that maybe we will witness some changed perspective here across the country with respect to the to the importance of the media and maybe the respect that it deserves?
No.
Okay.
No. But here's why. No, I should say no, not anytime soon. What we saw on Wednesday was a wake-up call for Americans, because if you were surprised by what happened on Wednesday, you haven't been paying attention. And this group of extremists, which I think is small when you compare it to the rest of the country, they're not stopping, right? And their agenda is not changing, and their belief system is not changing. So I believe that silence is complicity. Mm-hmm. So it is our job as journalists, but it's our jobs as community members to speak up, right? To speak truth to whatever power, whether it's an extremist group, whether it is the government. And it's our job. It doesn't matter that there's a transfer of power and a new political party in power. We're still going to hold them accountable. To think that another administration is going to save this country, I find to be very naive. If we want our democracy to move forward and we want a true republic, then it's our job as all Americans to find a common ground. You can't rely on politicians because they all have an agenda, no matter what.
Sure.
Party they're in. So I think that's where journalism comes in, right? It is to hold the powerful accountable no matter who they are. And I think that's just critically important to our democracy.
Well, you've said that so well. And I share your focus on the citizenry, the responsibility of citizens to hold government accountable and to call governmental officials to account when there are violations of the Constitution or violations of the law. And, you know, when we think about the siege on our nation's capital, the temple of democracy, 48 hours ago, we think about the brave men and women, members of the media, who stood there in the midst of that siege and covered it while members of Congress, rightly so, were being protected inside locked chambers. But isn't this the story of members of the press, members of the media, going all the way back to the American Revolution, being there, covering important events so as to share information, as you said at the outset of the show, with the American people? That's what your industry does.
Oh, and you think about it too. There is video out there right now. I'm thinking of some Associated Press journalists who were filming this, and you can hear them receiving death threats. Mm-hmm. They are covering this.
Yeah.
And they continue to cover it. And they do that because if we hadn't seen with our own eyes what happened on Wednesday, we wouldn't know the full story as citizens, right? And journalists have put themselves in highly difficult positions throughout history. I mean, they go to war zones. They are in the midst of these riots. There are very few people who would be willing to, frankly, put their lives on the line to report the news, to report the facts, to make sure that people have this information so that they can be informed. And at the core of what journalism is, it's a service. I mean, I do what I do because I want to be of service in some way. And my belief is that this is a service. You may not like what we're telling you, but it is a service so that you can be educated, you can be informed, and make critical decisions. Be a critical thinker. That doesn't mean you have to agree with everything that you read and with every journalist, but it's our job to be of service.
And it is a vital service. You're so right about that, and you do it so well. And we're so grateful that you took time to join us today on this episode of America Reimagined. Thanks, Gemma, for joining us today. And we look forward to having you back soon, I hope.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for joining us for this edition of America Reimagined. We are so privileged to host our guest, Gemma Gaudette of Boise State Public Radio. And as our show winds down, please enjoy this beautiful arrangement of America the Beautiful, performed by Steve Eaton, our friend and brilliant musician. The lyrics performed by State Senator Cherie Buckner-Webb and 8-year-old Charlotte Laval. Thanks again. Good night.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains.
Audio and guest information for all episodes of America Reimagined can be found at kisu.org. Production assistance is provided by Taylor Nadal and Mandy Gardner. For more information about the Alturas Institute, visit alturasinstitute.com. Our rendition of America the Beautiful is a new arrangement created by the talented musician Steve Eaton and sung by Idaho State Senator Cherie Buckner-Webb and 8-year-old Charlotte Laval.